Welcome to Shan's Healthcast, Episode 2, August 2006. This episode is brought to you by Shan's Healthcare and features excerpts from a radio interview with Gigi Moore Higgs, coordinator of the Breast Center at the University of Florida Shan's Cancer Center. Ms. Moore Higgs answers questions about the symptoms, treatments, and risk factors related to breast cancer. She is part of a multidisciplinary team of care providers who see patients at the Breast Center on the campus of Shan's at the University of Florida in Gainesville. For more information about the Breast Center, call 352-265-7070 or visit shans.org.
What are some of the signs and symptoms of breast cancer?
In general, in early breast cancer, there are no signs and symptoms. The patient has a mammogram performed as a screening mammogram, and during that time, an abnormality is identified. However, most women who find a breast cancer on their own present with a breast lump, and usually it's a painless lump that they feel in their breast that they may not have felt in the past.
And you said they were normally painless.
Normally, they're painless lumps.
And, I mean, that's kind of shocking. I mean, this can really go undetected for a while.
It certainly can, and particularly in women with larger breasts where the mass can actually be hidden further and deeper into the breast. It may be picked up only on a mammogram or ultrasound examination.
Does genetics play a part in breast cancer?
Yes, we do think we do believe that about 20% of women diagnosed with breast cancer actually have some sort of familial tendency towards breast cancer. And the more first-degree relatives that you have, the higher risk that you are. And what we recommend is that women have a good understanding of their family history of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and colon cancer because they tend to run in a triad. Women with breast cancer who, or women, shall I say, families who have women with breast cancer and ovarian cancer have a significantly higher risk of developing breast cancer later in life. And these women should be screened through a genetic counseling program where they understand their risks and can be tested with a blood test looking for the BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene that may increase their, and if they have that, their susceptibility to breast cancer significantly rises. 1 in 8 women in this country will develop breast cancer in their lifetime.
That's a staggering number. 1 in 8 women.
1 in 8 women in their lifetime.
Really?
Is what the American Cancer Society estimates. Over 200,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. In addition, approximately 1,600 men will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year in the United States. So it's not just women that need to be careful about new abnormalities that they find in their breast. Men also do.
Men also. That's, you never hear about men with breast cancer.
You certainly don't.
How, I mean, are they supposed to do exams too?
They should be doing breast exams. Of course, most men's breasts are very small, and they can easily detect an abnormality in their breast, a lump, or some thickening in the skin. But they should also be alert to the fact that breast cancer does occur in men, and if they feel something abnormal, it should be evaluated by their primary care physician immediately.
Wow, okay, so primary care physician, I mean, because they're not going to go to an OBGYN.
Correct.
But your primary care physician, what are some of the things that the doctor's going to do to check you out?
The first thing they'll do is a breast exam and evaluate the mass themselves. In some situations, you can feel some thickening in the skin or you can see an area of abnormality and discern that this is definitely different from the other side. The next step is a mammogram and an ultrasound. The mammogram helps us to see if we see an area of thickening or a density, a spiculated mass, or even just an area of calcifications that look like they're new or changed from a previous mammogram. The next step is an ultrasound. An ultrasound helps to define the abnormalities, helps us to see the borders, the edges, the size, gives us a little bit more information than a regular mammogram would do. The next step is that if there is something identified on either one of those two studies, the next step is a biopsy, and that can be done as an outpatient.
Can it really?
And nowadays, we do those actually in mammography. It can be either ultrasound-guided or what we call stereotactic-guided biopsy, where we actually use the images from the mammogram to direct the needle into the correct place and take a core tissue out of the breast that can be looked at under the microscope.
And then from there, you decipher if it's cancerous or non-cancerous.
Absolutely.
Now, are there different kinds of breast cancer?
There are. The most common is called an infiltrating ductal cancer. It starts in the ducts of the breast and slowly breaks through the duct and into the fatty part of the breast and the fibrous tissue of the breast. The other type of breast cancer that we see more commonly is lobular cancers, where the cancer actually started in the lobe or the lobule of the breast. Ductal cancers take up about probably somewhere around 75% of breast cancers are ductal in nature, and then a smaller percentage being lobular. And then there are a few unusual tumors of the breast that we see, but they're much more rare tumors.
What about nursing mothers? I mean, they're going through a lot of changes to begin with, but what about that? I mean, because you can nurse for a year, several years.
You sure can. And it should be a discussion that the patient has with their OBGYN. Depending on their age, we do see a number of women who present with a breast mass. Often it's a tender breast mass that occurs while they are breastfeeding. And this can sometimes be a blocked duct, with something called a galactosele. And these are benign changes in the breast that occur during breastfeeding. In those situations, ultrasound is frequently our test of choice because it helps to differentiate. Mammograms are difficult in lactating women to read, so we usually recommend ultrasound to evaluate those. Occasionally, a biopsy is recommended. The problem with biopsy is that once you have a break in the skin and into that duct or that area of abnormality, you may develop some leaking. So it's a situation of evaluating carefully with the patient how suspicious this appears to be and whether or not they actually need to stop breastfeeding or if we can just treat it medically initially.
And as far as treatments go, what are some of the treatments? The first thing that comes to mind is the mastectomy.
Commonly, there are three approaches to treating breast cancer. Surgery, chemotherapy or hormone therapy, and radiation therapy. The treatments are individually designed for each patient. It's very important that when a patient comes and presents with a breast cancer, that we sit down and discuss what their options are. For some patients, it's as simple as surgery and maybe some radiation therapy. For other women, it's aggressive chemotherapy followed by surgery, followed by radiation therapy. The key pieces that we have to find out are the size of the tumor, how much of the tumor is taking up the breast, whether or not the tumor has grown into the skin of the breast, whether or not there are any lymph nodes that are involved in tumor under the arm, and whether or not how aggressive the tumor appears under the microscope when on that biopsy. So there's lots and lots of information. And then, of course, what's most important is the patient's comfort level with the decision in terms of what her choices are, whether she would prefer mastectomy to be finished with the treatment, no additional treatment, or whether or not she's willing to go on to additional treatment if she's going to conserve the breast.
Now, you mentioned when the tumor grows into the skin. Is that really dangerous when it gets to that point?
That's a later stage of breast cancer, and it means, unfortunately, that the tumor has grown into the skin and is probably growing along the channels of the lymphatics and along the blood supply to the breast, and much higher risk of there being what we call distant disease, disease that may have already spread to other sites of the body, particularly those lymph nodes up underneath the arm. Two other things that are important when we're evaluating the tumor to decide on treatment aspects are the hormone receptor status of the tumor. Some of these tumors are receptive, have receptors on them that are pick up estrogen and progesterone. Mm-hmm. And the other part of this is also something called HER2-new, which is a fairly new marker that we found in breast cancers. And there has been a drug specifically designed for women who are HER2-new positive called Herceptin. If women have a estrogen receptor positive tumor, one of our treatment options is hormone therapy, hormone suppression therapy, where we give them medications, things like a drug called tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitor medications that actually suppress the body's circulating estrogen so that the tumors can't feed off of the free-flowing estrogen in their system. And so that's one of the treatment options that many women have once the surgery is complete and once if they choose radiation therapy, the radiation therapy is complete and sometimes follows chemotherapy as well.
Is it possible just to have hormone therapy and maybe the tumors shrink? Or is that normally after the more intensive?
That's usually more given after the surgery and the chemotherapy and radiation therapy. It's given over a 5-year period of time. And there are a number of studies being conducted both here in the United States and in Europe looking at the exact dose or the exact combination of hormone therapies because we had tamoxifen for so many years, and the aromatase inhibitors are relatively new, and there's more of them as an option. So people are looking at different ways to provide hormone therapy to see if they can reduce the number of years women have to take them, as well as seeing if there's a better way of combining them to provide a longer period of success with these drugs.
What are some of the side effects of that treatment?
Unfortunately, when you suppress estrogen, it's menopausal symptoms. And so many women do complain of hot flashes, weight gain. We do have a concern with tamoxifen in terms of the development of blood clots and endometrial cancers as potential side effects. With the aromatase inhibitors, our biggest concern is that you're suppressing estrogen and decreasing bone density. So increasing the risk of osteoporosis. And many women who are on the aromatase inhibitors do complain of some joint discomfort and some kind of achiness in their bones as potential side effects.
Is that part of the menopausal? Or is it just a side effect?
Seems to be a side effect in general of some of the aromatase inhibitors.
Now, if they're on this and they're going through all these symptoms, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going through menopause, though, correct?
Well, the drugs are a chemical menopause, particularly for women who haven't already been through menopause. Mm-hmm. You know, our bodies do produce a certain amount of endogenous estrogen, even if we have been through menopause. And so it doesn't go away 100%. At the time of menopause.
But can they go on, say, you know, they are cancer-free after a while, mm-hmm. can they go on and continue to have children?
In some women, that has been successful. It depends a little bit upon their age. There's mm-hmm. so many factors that go into fertility mm-hmm. for these women. Certainly, this is an issue for younger women, women diagnosed in their late 20s and early 30s who may not have completed their family and are concerned about what their treatment options should be. So some women choose not to go on to those therapies because they do want to take an opportunity and have more children after their diagnosis. For some women, the diagnosis of breast cancer means stopping having children and making that as a decision that they prefer to not take any risks. Although most of the data that has shown that pregnancy does not increase the risk of a recurrence.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. So there's no connection between once having breast cancer, having a child, and the breast cancer coming back.
There does not appear to be. It's a small number of women that have been followed for long periods of time because, you know, most breast cancers are found in women over the age of 40. So it's only a small population of women, and then again, a smaller population who have chosen to go on to have children afterwards. So that data, those are small studies that of women have been followed.
And the question I really want to ask is, if you're diagnosed with breast cancer, that's not the end of you being a woman.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think it's important that people understand that breast cancer treatment is very individualized. Yes, sometimes we do have to recommend mastectomy because of the size of the tumor. And some women have chosen to go on and have the breast removed on the other side because they're concerned about risk. But we've come a long way in our opportunities to provide women with surgery for breast reconstruction. And many women have elected not to follow that route. They feel free from their risk of developing breast cancer. They've gone through all the treatment, and they want to move on and enjoy their lives. So yes, some of the treatments, particularly the surgery and the chemotherapy and the hormone therapies, can be defeminizing, but it's not the end of being a woman, for sure.
You can go back and still have your feminine ways.
Absolutely.
And breast reconstruction, I'm assuming implants are involved?
Sometimes, yes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's skin flaps or tissue flaps from other areas of the body.
Really?
The abdomen, the back provide several areas that we can take flaps from, tissue flaps from, to reconstruct the breast.
Really?
So it doesn't necessarily have to mean implants.
Is there any connection between breast implants and breast cancer?
That's a hot topic.
Yeah.
The data has been very conflicting in that area, and certainly people are concerned about implants and developing breast cancer. I don't think anybody can put an absolute risk on it.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, after you've had breast cancer, having an implant is not going to, not at this time, not by
Correct.
What research shows
Correct.
Us so far.
And most of the implants that are being done are saline implants. Mm-hmm. We are moving towards safer silicone implants. And women, once again, it's an informed choice of their preference and what risks they're willing to take. And I think that's important that, you know, every day we make choices about our health, just in the foods we eat and, you know, which road we drive on in North Central Florida, et cetera. So, again, it's an informed choice, making sure women understand all the risks and benefits and making their own choice as to what's comfortable for them. What's comfortable for you may not be what's comfortable for me.
Exactly. Is it harder to check for cancer if you've had breast implants?
It is. The mammograms are a little bit more difficult to do. There are some techniques in which the implants are actually pushed a little bit out of the way, and in some implants, in others, you can't do that procedure. So it does make it much more difficult for us to pick up breast cancers. But as long as women understand the importance of that screening test and having it performed by somebody who understands the implants that they have in place, you know, we can certainly pick them up and they can be diagnosed. And oftentimes we can do everything we can to keep the implant in place if it doesn't interfere with the treatment itself.
Okay. Well, let's talk about preventions. How often, at what age should women start getting mammograms, and then how often?
Okay. Women, the American Cancer Society recommends that women at age 40 begin annual mammography.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a family history and have a significant increased risk or are diagnosed with having a BRCA1 gene, then the recommendations are that you actually start mammography at a much younger age, after age 25. All women, starting with the time they start their menses, should be doing self-breast exams on a monthly basis. We recommend that you do the self-breast exam in the shower or in the tub several days after your menstrual cycle, because our breasts do respond to the hormones prior to our menses. So after your period, you start your exams. They should be done monthly. And it's really a good idea to start documenting. Keep a small journal, the fact that you did the exam and what you found. Women say, oh, I don't examine my breasts because they always feel lumpy, bumpy. But if you know your breast yourself, you'll be the best person to determine if something's different on a month-to-month basis. And so those are the two basic recommendations for screening.
And you had mentioned not doing a breast exam while you're on your period.
No, it should
because
be done several.
Things change.
Well, things are tender.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, women complain of tenderness. The breast can be a little bit more cystic just before your menstrual cycle. So, we usually recommend that you perform it 5 to 7 days after your menstrual cycle starts.
Okay, that makes sense. You may feel a bit bloated. Things are a little
right.
off.
Right.
That
exactly.
makes sense. What about some of the preventions? I mean, we know that breast cancer obviously can be genetic.
Mm-hmm.
What other things may cause it that you might want to stay away from?
fatty foods has been linked with the development of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. That is the first diets I've heard that.
Yeah, diets high in fat intake. Alcohol use, more than one alcoholic drink in a day, are two of the probably biggest dietary risk factors. There's been an awful lot of interest in the soy intake foods, etc., in terms of phytoestrogens and the role that they play in breast cancer. The jury is still out on whether or not that's more preventative or actually more increases risk. So
there's so many benefits to soy that I hear of, but now. Absolutely. The question is,
and it has been, you know, that question has been around for some time. So, I often get women who have already been diagnosed with breast cancer who are looking to have a healthier diet, you know, ask me about that, and the data is really very, very conflicting. Mm-hmm. So, as long as they're not going overboard.
Yeah, that's true. Everything in moderation.
Absolutely. Exercise appears to decrease risk of breast cancer. Women who are physically fit have a lower incidence of breast cancer. And that, again, may be related to the fact that endogenous estrogen roaming around, fat plays a part in that. The amount of body fat that we have plays a role in the amount of endogenous estrogen that we have. So that may be the link there. Women who have been previously treated for either lung cancer or in the past, remote past, treated for Hodgkin's disease with radiation therapy have a much higher risk of developing breast cancer if the breasts were part of that treatment field. That's an important thing. Women who have had Hodgkin's disease or been treated in the past should be very carefully screened. In terms of age, is probably your biggest risk factor.
Really?
You know, we know that as you get older, your chances of a breast cancer go much higher. And so, you know, we can't do a whole lot about age. We can't do a whole lot about the socioeconomic status that we live in. Can't do a whole lot about where we grew up in terms of geographics. So there aren't many things that we can do to reduce our risk of breast cancer.
But you can increase your chance of beating the cancer by detecting early.
Absolutely. And that's probably the take-home message at any time is, you know, stick with your breast exams and do your mammogram on an annual basis. And hopefully we'll pick it up early enough on that we can treat it successfully.
Does birth control increase the risk of breast cancer? Any type of birth control, whether it be the pill or other things?
Again, you're taking a hormone that's not foreign to the body, but is not what your body automatically produces. There does appear to be a slightly increased risk of breast cancer in women who have taken contraceptives for long periods of time, oral contraceptives. However, that risk does go down as the further years you get away from having taken it. Again, that data is somewhat controversial. It's the same with hormone replacement therapy and whether or not that's an increased risk. Again, some of the data shows that estrogen alone, taken alone as a replacement therapy, may be better for you than the combined estrogen, particularly with the synthetic progesterone agents. Again, you know, there's mixed data out there. So we have to be very careful in how we counsel patients that they understand that there may be some risk to some of these things that they take.
And the research, there's always new research coming in. And so at Shands at UF at the Cancer Center, I mean, you guys are always on top of the research and the data. Do you ever conduct tests on your own?
We do have some ongoing research right now. We have a couple of projects that are ongoing. One of them is looking at some coping skills of patients after the diagnosis of breast cancer. We also have another study that is looking at laser imaging of the breast as an alternative to mammography to identify breast masses and see if the laser imaging will actually give us a better sense of whether something is benign or malignant.
Is that also more comfortable to go through?
Much more comfortable to go through. So there are a lot of different things. We participate in a number of multi-center national clinical trials looking at some of the chemotherapy agents, some of the hormone therapy agents, as well as some of the newer techniques in radiation therapy with mammocyte and partial breast irradiation, which are some of the newer players on the block in the treatment of early stage breast cancer.
Do you get a lot of people from different areas that come to Shands at UF for cancer treatment?
Yeah, we treat women from all over the state of Florida and South Georgia. Many of them come because we do have several people who are, you know, been in taking care of women with breast cancer for many, many years and are nationally known for their treatment, approaches both in surgery and in radiation therapy. And so we do get a lot of referrals for that from all over the state.
And you triggered something a little bit earlier when you mentioned post like recovery counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Does Shands at UF, the cancer center, does it?
We have
offer counseling. This is a tough thing to go through.
We have a social work team. We have the breast center itself has a social worker who works very closely with our patients, both at the time of diagnosis if they are in need, as well as following them through their chemotherapy period of time. We have social workers in our Department of Radiation Therapy. We also have clinical psychology that we work very closely with, so that they are available if we need patients referred to them for more extensive one-on-one counseling. We provide a genetic counselor who can sit down with women who are at high risk and go into great detail with them what their risks are based on their family history. So we have a fairly extensive multidisciplinary approach. Each week we meet as a team once a week and review all of our new cases of breast cancer. Also, we, you know, discuss as a team patients who are at high risk or patients who have an abnormal, unusual finding on a mammogram that may not necessarily mean a malignancy, but are difficult cases to follow. So, yes, we have a big team of people that take care of these patients and work together very, very closely.
And that's comforting to know because you mentioned earlier that everybody's treatment is different.
Absolutely.
And so with a larger team of doctors and nurses and counselors, you get that specialized care.
Right. You know, treatment is somewhat standard for each individual stage, but then you have to factor in the patient's age, their overall health, their wishes and desires. And so each treatment really should be individualized to the woman themselves.
And the survival rate of breast cancer, I know this is a huge generalized question. But what is the survival?
It depends on the stage of disease. And we talk about survival as being from the day of diagnosis on, and not survival in terms of a 5-year survival, because many people are used to the old way of saying, I made it to 5 years, I won't have a problem with this again. What we've learned is that breast cancer can recur 10, 15, 20 years out. And so your risk.
20 years after you were first diagnosed and treated?
It can recur. So, you know, when we talk about survival, we talk about long-term survival. And the earlier the stage of disease, the much better chances. We have 85-90% chance of never having to deal with the breast cancer again. The problem with women is we have two breasts. So whatever placed us at risk for the one breast cancer also is the risk factors for us for the other breast cancer. And so many women will have a breast cancer and a number of years later develop a breast cancer in the other breast. So it's important that women understand that their survival, once their treatment over is, that they should be getting very close follow-up by somebody who understands breast cancer for a long period of time. The other piece to that is the fact that they've been through pretty aggressive treatment in many instances, and we do know that there are late effects of some of these treatments that can be picked up 7, 8, 9, 10 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that the person that is following a patient who has been diagnosed with breast cancer is up on the data and understands the types of things that need to be done and what certain symptoms and signs mean 7, 8, 9, 10 years later after a breast cancer has been treated. There's one more very important piece to survivorship, and that's the rehabilitation of the physical person.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these treatments can leave women with some scarring under the arm, reduced arm ability to lift an arm or reach, and can also set the patient up for developing things like arm swelling, lymphedema of the arm. So we encourage, part of our team at the University of Florida is our rehabilitation specialists who specialize in nothing but taking care of women who have undergone mastectomy, undergone reconstruction, or even undergone just nothing more than just a small biopsy and a sentinel lymph node biopsy under the arm, to make sure that they don't develop the scar tissue, and if they do, that we can try and improve and get them to the best possible state of range of motion of that arm and ability to use the arm.
As best you can to get back to normalcy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because our goal is to make this, you know, a hiccup in your life and not a, you know, take away what you had as good quality of life. And so we have to look at that long time piece as well.
So if we walk away with anything this morning, it is do yourself exams. If it's time for your mammogram, make sure you do that. And if there are any signs, make sure you catch it early.
Absolutely. If you find anything that you are concerned about, it's more important that you get in and for somebody to reassure you that it's a normal finding, because it may be the very first signs of a problem with a breast cancer.
Thank you for listening to Shan's HealthCast. Shan's Healthcare will continue to provide healthcasts covering a wide variety of general health issues. If you would like to subscribe to Shan's Healthcast or would like more information on this or other topics, please visit shans.org/healthcast. Shan's Healthcare is a private, not-for-profit healthcare system affiliated with the University of Florida. Shan's includes 9 hospitals, a network of more than 80 primary and specialty clinical practices, and a medical staff of more than 1,500 UF faculty and community physicians. UF and Shan's, the science of hope.